Well, you've probably experienced the same thing that I have. You're walking along, all of a sudden, boom, you're on your back or on your bottom, don't know what happened. Those falls can be funny if you don't get hurt, but often they cause some injuries that can be hard to recover from. Larry Mueller here, talking today with physical therapist Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. And they're here to share what they know about how to deal with those kinds of pains and aches and sprains and strains. Bill's an associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and a senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinics. Great to see you, Bill.
Good to be back, Larry. Thank you.
Lori Tyne Brody with us by phone today. She's a physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. She's also the graduate program director for the Rocky Mountain University of Health Professionals in Provo, Utah. Lori, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing just fine.
Well, it's great to have both of you with us today. And there's always, I guess, plenty to talk about this time of the year. Lots of falls, common falls, I would expect. There are many of those.
Yeah, and there you kind of mentioned it. First, when you do fall down, you wonder, did I break anything? You know, any bones sticking out? Once you realize you're okay, you look around, did anybody see me fall? Because it is embarrassing.
Yeah.
But it is a major issue at any time of the year. But as we head into late fall and winter and start getting sleet and snow and black ice, people really, really need to be careful. It's not just broken bones, but head injuries and all kinds of sprains and strains.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. I don't think I gave the number. Let me do that right now. You can call us with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there, and we'd love to hear from you. I want to make sure we talk about preventing falls. Are there things that we can do, maybe exercises that we can do to help avoid them in the first place or maybe sort of minimize that injury when it does happen? And Lori, maybe start with you.
Yeah, absolutely. There are many things you can do on all different aspects of it. So if you're in your home, the first thing you want to do is look for hazards in your home. Things like rugs that perhaps don't need to be there, rugs on a slippery surface, anything that you could catch your foot on. You know, before you retire for the night, you should see that the pathway from your bedroom to your bathroom was clear. For example, we often find small toys on our floor at home, and those kinds of hazards, if you step on them, can create a fall. Using night lights in your home so that you can see at night. If you use an assistive device, keeping that close at hand so you can use your assistive device. When you're outside, in the same kind of thing, you know, watching your environment, looking for that crack in the sidewalk that might trip you up, or sometimes that hole in the grass, and the grass is, you know, soft yet at this time of year with the rain and the moisture in the fall, and sometimes you can't see the divots or holes in the ground, and those can create falls. So, you know, the environment is one piece, and then your own physical condition is the next thing. There are certainly exercises that you can do, from strengthening exercises, strengthening your legs and core, to actually practicing balance exercises.
Mm.
A variety of balance exercises you can do. And again, if balance is an issue, you can see your physical therapist for a couple of visits to obtain some exercises that you can do at home. There is a falls clinic at UW where you can go and attend classes on fall reduction. So there are a number of resources available for people.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and tied to all of that is footwear. You know, especially when people are outdoors and there's a little bit of snow or potentially some black ice, you know, good footwear is important. And there's different kinds of boots that have good treads, or I think they call it yak tracks, you can put onto over a shoe, over a boot, to give you a little more traction. And, you know, when there's snow out there, you're not sure what's underneath the snow, shortening your stride a little bit.
Yeah.
I know that sometimes we're all in a hurry, but shortening your stride a little bit, widen your base of support a little bit, can help prevent a fall. And, you know, and both Lori and I see a number of people come in secondary to a fall. And one of the questions I always ask is, why did you fall? And I'm hoping I hear, like, you know, I tripped over my dog or cat, or I didn't see the rug that had been folded over. But sometimes people aren't sure why they fell. Mm. And so anybody who has fallen, there's all kinds of reasons. Sometimes it can be related to medication that makes people lightheaded when they sit up too fast or stand up too fast. But sometimes there's issues that, you know, physicians need to be involved to help sort out. So why did somebody fall? And exercise can certainly have a role, but there's other issues, medical issues too, that may need to be addressed.
Okay. So plenty to think about, that's for sure. And Jenny in Washburn has a question for you, so let's move to her. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, I learned to golf a few years ago, and I really like it, but I'm older. I'm 62, and I think I overdid it a little this summer. I've got a real stiff left elbow, and I'm wondering now what I can do so that next spring I'm in better shape and don't have this issue. It's stiff enough that I can't straighten that arm as straight as my other arm.
I can say at first that I envy you the fact that you've played enough that you might have an overuse elbow injury. But having said that, what do you think, Bill and Lori?
Where does your elbow hurt? Does it hurt behind, on the inside, in the front?
It's behind, and I think it happens when it's the left side. So when I'm right-handed and I swing through, it's when I get down to the bottom. I think I just pulled it. It hurts around the back.
Yeah. Well, to fully straighten your elbow, the bone at the back of your elbow, the tip of your elbow, has to fit in a little depression around the forearm bones. So if you can't straighten your elbow and your pain is in back, you have some blockage in the back of your elbow. Are you right or left-handed?
I'm right-handed.
You're right-handed. You should go in and have this seen, because losing the ability to fully straighten your elbow can be pretty disabling, and it is one of the most difficult motions in your body to regain once you lose it. So there are some places, like if you lose, you know, the ability to fully flex your knee, like most people do after, for example, a knee replacement, you can function pretty well in almost everything you need to do with that motion loss. But losing the full extension at your elbow can be very devastating. Mm. So I'd go in and be seen.
And then
have that looked at. And then they can talk to you about the cause of that problem. And what you should do to prevent it from coming back next year.
Okay, so hopefully a physical therapist could help me and maybe design some exercises or something.
Hmm? Yeah, Bill's got something to add, too.
Yeah, Jenny, I'm glad you called. We have a number of callers who describe golfer's elbow, which is more of a tendonitis or tendinopathy type of condition. But I agree with Lori, what you're describing is different than that. And again, losing the ability to straighten out, whether it's an elbow or a knee, is a motion that you really want to get back for golf as well as lots of other activities. And the physical therapist will be able to really evaluate that area and maybe do some stretching for you, but also teach you how to, you know, things to do at home to help promote that and then maintain that. And once you get your mobility back, then you can talk to the physical therapist about golfing and your swing and then what can you do to prevent this next year.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, good. Thank you so much for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show as well. Rick in Oconomowoc, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What's on your mind?
I'm what I call a power hiker. I do 15 to 20 kilometers per week, usually 3 or 4 times to make that total. I hike at about 6 kilometers per hour. And 2 weeks ago, going up a hill, I pulled the hamstring of my right leg. I think it's the one in the middle. And I'm still not back where I can walk on it, but I certainly can't hike yet. And I'm wondering what I might be able to do to try and get back in hiking again quickly. How can I treat it?
Hmm.
May I ask your age?
66.
66. Okay. Well, the first question is whether it was truly a hamstring or if it was referred pain. Are you feeling it right in the middle of the posterior thigh?
Yes.
Okay. And what is it? Is it constant? Does it come and go? Is there anything that makes it worse?
No. When it first happened, it hurt quite a bit, even to walk. But after a few days, it lessened up. And now I'm walking fine. But the minute I start to put any amount of extended pressure to it, like walking at that faster rate, I can feel it being really tight and a little painful.
Okay. And you don't see any bruising, and it looks normal to you, like the other back
yes.
of your legs?
Yes. And in fact, last Saturday I was in for a massage, and the therapist said, yes, it looked like there was a little knotting maybe in the hamstring.
Okay. Well, some of the massage work is good, and there are a couple approaches you can see how you do with either of those. And one is a gradual, progressive increase in your hiking, you know, sort of taking your hiking just up to the speed where you start to feel it and then back down again and see if you can work your way up. And yet another approach would be a standard strengthening program for your hamstrings to see if you can get it back back on track again. But in any case, have you had an injury like this before?
No, I haven't.
Okay. You know, given that hiking is such an important part of your life, hamstrings are one of the more difficult muscles to rehabilitate. They tend to recur a lot. So this may be a time you want to seek out some advice and get some direction on how to progress with that injury and how to rehabilitate it. In the meantime, you can try some easy hamstring curls, you know, sort of the foot to buttocks activity. You can try a little bit of squatting, and you can try a little bit of the hiking, keeping just below that threshold, and
okay.
see how far that gets you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then tied to that, Rick, the transitioning back to hiking, one of the things besides altering the speed and what kind of terrain are you hiking on is shorten your stride length a little bit. That will decrease the mechanical load on the hamstrings to a degree. And then as you continue to recover, then you can start lengthening back out to your more normal stride length. And Laurie's right about strengthening not only the hamstrings, you know, concentrically where you're strengthening and shortening, but also eccentrically where there's a lengthening component to the exercise. And then if you're not doing any core work, that can also be helpful in terms of recovery and preventing hamstring injuries too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm not sure what you mean by core work.
Core stabilization work, or it goes beyond strengthening the abdominals, but strengthening the muscles of your trunk, the back half, the back side of you, side as well as your abdominals. There's a variety of ways to work on the core. I don't know if you're familiar with side planks or prone planks as an exercise. Have you ever seen anybody working on a physio ball, one of those large exercise balls, or a foam roller, where you're incorporating some balance into the movement or the static posture that you're holding? You know, if you're unfamiliar with that, this may be where a physical therapist could help you and not only assess the hamstring area, but also go up into your core a bit too.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne Brody, physical therapist at the University of Wisconsin, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking physical fitness today in a way, avoiding injury while raking or shoveling snow or exercising, moving back indoors for a lot of people for exercises as we get into the winter season. Larry Mueller here with my guest Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and Laurie Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Great to have them along. Thanks for listening in. If you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show or email us at talk@wpr.org. Vic in Milwaukee has a question for you next. So let's go there. Hi, Vic.
Hi, how are you guys doing? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. You know, I've had this injury for about three and a half years, and I have tried a lot of different things. I've gone to physical therapists, and currently I'm working with an acupuncturist. Basically, it's a muscle tear, and whenever I did an MRI, the doctors would look at it like they're not too interested because it was a soft tissue damage, and it didn't involve any surgery for them. Usually that's the impression I got. So I've had two MRIs, and the last time the physical therapist looked at it, he said it's a lateral tear in your hip joint on my left hip. And I've had this pain, you know, where there was a point where I couldn't walk to now, after a lot of therapy, I can walk and play some tennis. But I'm somebody who was really active in tennis, racquetball, all kinds of sports. And I'm like 6'3", and I was 220 pounds. Now I've put on weight because I can't do much activity. And I wanted some advice from you guys, you know, if you can help me. I've been trying to do all kinds of exercises to strengthen that area, but I haven't gotten the results that I wanted, you know, over the last 3 years or so.
So you have a labral tear in your hip?
That's the last thing I heard from the physical therapy. But they said on top of the soft tissue damage, what they could see in the MRI was a labral tear.
Okay, because labral tears can be a surgical issue depending upon the extent, the location, and so on. For many years, you know, the only surgery they did on hips really were hip replacements and hip fracture repairs, but the hip is sort of becoming the new shoulder in that they're looking a lot closer at labral tears and whether or not those are contributors to ongoing hip pain that that are improved with surgical intervention. So I'm not sure when the last time was you saw a physician. Maybe they saw the labral tear and said that it was not a repairable labral tear, and that that the bigger issue was muscle damage, which, you know, tends to be the purview of the physical therapist, where they would refer you to physical therapy for rehabilitation of the muscle injury.
Right. I mean, the last MRI, they said it was labral tear, but I've done two MRIs or three, and every time they said it's definitely, you know, soft tissue damage.
Right. Well, it depends upon the soft tissue. If it's a muscle tissue, there
right.
isn't. You would be treated conservatively with therapy. And if it is a labral tear, which is also a soft tissue injury, but is a more of a cartilage injury, not a muscle tissue, that may or may not be a surgical issue.
Okay. What about if it's a tendon? What about if it's a tendon tear in the hip? If the tendon or the ligament is torn?
Well, a tendon is different from a ligament. A tendon attaches muscle to bone. Ligament attaches bone to bone. They don't do ligament repairs around the hip. It's not a common thing to do. And tendons, you know, unless the tendon is completely avulsed off the bone, they don't do surgery on those though either. Those are treated conservatively with therapy.
Lori, this is just a question for you. Is MRI the gold standard for labral tears, or is it arthrogram that would maybe give additional information about how relevant the labral tear may be?
MRI is still probably the go-to.
Okay.
You know, they can do like an arthro CT if they need to, but, you know, given that he's had two or three MRIs, apparently based upon the previous results, nobody has felt like a CT
right.
is indicated.
Right.
So.
I mean, the best result they got was from a physical therapist and this acupuncturist who uses needles to spasm the muscles around there. He tells me to do strengthening exercises.
Yeah. So it may be that even though there is some labral damage in your hip, that the overriding problem is the muscle, and it's being treated appropriately by the physical therapist and the acupuncturist.
And you've broken up a bit, Vic, so we're not able to hear you very well anymore. I hope this helps. And I don't know if you have anything to add, Bill.
No, it sounds like the he has made some progress. I understand he's not where he wants to be, and I guess I'm assuming that the physical therapist has done some really deep soft tissue work, deep soft tissue massage. If in fact this was a muscle injury and there was some scar tissue, but really getting in deep, I guess if some really deep massage has not been attempted, and then it sounds like the acupuncturist. Maybe doing a combination of acupuncture and maybe dry needling, which is a technique using needles, a little different premise than acupuncture, but again, as a way to break up scar tissue and to desensitize areas of muscle that have been injured. So, if dry needling has not been tried, if deep, deep soft tissue work has not been tried, that might help get them to the next step.
And thanks again for calling, Vic. Appreciate your call. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guests today, as we talk about dealing with those aches and pains and sprains and strains. They're physical therapists at UW-Madison. Betsy in Madison has a question. Hi, Betsy.
Hi, Larry and your guests. My name's Betsy Abramson, and I'm the deputy director of the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging. And I just wanted to let your listeners know about some really helpful resources on falls that involve the great work of physical therapists as well. We run an evidence-based prevention program called Stepping On, which are 7-week community-based workshops for older adults who want to prevent falls. Three of the sessions involve a physical therapist as a guest expert who covers the demonstrates and leads the exercises and strength and balance exercises, as Lori had mentioned, that are exercises that are specifically evidence-based to prevent falls. A lot of people think they're in good shape because they walk or swim, and that's great for cardiovascular and for other things. But to really prevent falls, you have to do certain strength and balance exercises, and these are offered in these workshops. So they're offered in most counties in the state, and if you're interested, Larry, I could give you the website.
Yes, please do, Betsy.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Right. It's www, of course. WIHealthyAging.org, like WIF or Wisconsin, WIHealthyAging.org. And as I'm sure Lori and Bill would mention, falls are not a normal part of aging. It isn't, shouldn't be accepted of, oh, well, you're old, you're going to fall. It falls can be prevented from engaging in just the kind of preventive learning and measures that your guests have talked about, of doing home modifications, having your vision checked, having your medications reviewed, and going through these strength and balance exercises. And all that is taught in these community-based workshops where a physical therapist generously comes in three times during the course of these 7 weeks to teach folks these exercises. And a pharmacist comes in and talks about what kind of medications may be contributing to falls. And folks talk about home modification and vision specialists. So it's really important to know that one out of every three people over age 65 will fall every year. And these have very dire consequences, but falls really can be prevented. Right now in Wisconsin, their falls-related injuries are the leading cause of death, far exceeding car accidents now in Wisconsin. So it's really a huge public health imperative that we can all have a role in preventing.
Yeah.
Betsy, what's the cost of these workshops?
The workshops are anywhere from free to maybe $20 for some folks to take them. So they're run really by our Wisconsin Aging Network through the Aging and Disability Resource Centers or County Aging Units, often in partnerships with healthcare providers here in Dane County, for example. Dean, GHC, a couple other providers help put on the workshops. And so the leaders are either healthcare professionals or Aging Network professionals who've been through a special 3-day training to learn this special curriculum. And it's offered as low cost as possible so that as many people can take it as we have spots for, so we can prevent falls all around.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Well, great information. Thank you.
That is great information, and Betsy, and we'll post that. We already have it posted. Judith already got it up on our Facebook page. So anybody who wants to know about those workshops will be able to go directly to them. And thank you again.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much.
Part of what Betsy points out and reinforces that the falls, it's multifactorial. There's lots of different causes or combination of things that can lead to falls. And I really like your comment that falls are not normal. And there's so many things that are chalked up as being normal as we age, and they're not. And many times they can be prevented.
Genevieve in Madison says she's heard, this is an email, I think, that exercises like Pilates that strengthen the core can help prevent falls, and yoga for balance as well. Is that true, basically? Can that help?
Yeah, I think programs, approaches like Pilates and yoga and Tai Chi that incorporate a combination of balance and coordination and awareness of what muscles are contracting and when are very beneficial. And generally when they're taught by trained instructors are safe, and people's programs can be designed individually based on their needs, which also is really, really important. So I think those are two good examples of approaches that can help with balance and potentially help prevent falls.
And I also think that Betsy made a really good point that many people think that their walking or their current exercise program is sufficient. Now, one of the things I say to my patients is, you know, if I set them up on an exercise program and I say, and I want to see you back in 3 weeks, and I want to advance this. And sometimes they'll look at me and I say, you know, if you're doing the same exercises 3 months from now that you're doing today, I'll be disappointed, because you need to progress your exercises and you need to change up your exercises so that you have a wide variety of things and they advance as you become more skilled and better at them, so that they are continue to be challenging for you.
Mm-hmm. All good points. So we had a Facebook question from Sherry, who just injured her lower back while shoveling out the barn. The pain is in lower back above the left buttock. My husband thinks I pinched something. Weather is really nice, and I need to heal quickly to work horses and finish fence building. Any suggestions? I've used my electrostimulator on it. Sleeping is very uncomfortable.
Yeah, there's always an urgency. And the good news, it sounds like there are no symptoms below the buttock area, no numbness, no tingling, and no weakness down around the foot. And if that's the case, then Sherry should recover from this. Depending on how severe the injury is, recovery can last anywhere from a few days up to 4 to 6 weeks. Sherry, what you need to be most careful with is activities that require flexion, lots of bending. I mean, the more bending you can do through your hips and through your knees as opposed to your back, the better. Although it sounds like some of your activities with the horses and things require some bending. But the more you can do with your legs, the better. And often standing up straight, putting hands on the hips, and just gently arching your back backwards will take the stretch or tension off the structures that have been injured. If there's no medication allergies, if she's taken, you know, Aleve or ibuprofen or Tylenol for pain in the past, that could be something that could be good to take. And using ice early on as opposed to heat. Doesn't mean she can't soak in a nice hot shower to loosen things up, but especially after working in the barn or doing those kind of bending activities, ice is going to be better to numb that area. And if the pain starts moving down into the leg, especially below the knee, then it might be good for her to go in and be seen by a physical therapist who can evaluate her and give her more specific exercise instructions.
Sarah in Delafield, let's turn to you now. Hi, Sarah. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My husband was recently diagnosed with a herniated disc, which is pinching his sciatica nerve, so he does have pain all the way down the right side, sort of like you were just talking about, down to his foot.
Yeah.
And he has seen a doctor for it, and his main question is with regards to stretching. Some places say stretching the hamstrings is a good thing, but then some places say stretching the hamstrings is not a good thing, because then you're going to irritate that nerve more. I was wanting some more information on that, if possible.
You bet. It's a great question. And I cannot tell how many people I've seen over the years who fit your husband's description, and I've asked them to stop doing hamstring stretching at least for a while. When a nerve gets irritated, it doesn't like to be stretched. And when it gets stretched, it gets flared up pretty quickly. The problem is the back of the leg feels tight. And so intuitively, you think I need to stretch the leg, when actually it's too early for that. And so when the back leg feels really tight, I instruct people, you can stretch your calf, kind of doing the classic runner stretch where you lean against the door and you keep your heel on the floor and you lean forward. And then doing a knee to chest stretch, so you're stretching more the hip joint. So in essence, you're stretching above and below the hamstring area. And that can help with some of the tightness and not put such a hard stretch on the nerve itself. Besides that, though, Sarah, there are exercises designed to move the pain up out of the leg toward the back. And before the back pain goes away, it's got to get out of the leg first. And so if he has not been instructed in those kinds of exercise, and it's called a McKenzie exercise approach, which is the best thing to try early on. You'd see a physical therapist, and in one or two visits can teach him how to do those things and then see if there's anything else that can be done beyond that. But it goes beyond stretching the hamstrings out for recovery, for a faster recovery.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. And Ian in Madison. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. I've had a reoccurring issue with what I think is a pinched sciatica. I've had it in my left leg several years ago, and now I've had it in my right leg for maybe 6 months now, and it's just gotten worse and worse. I've gone to every kind of therapy you mentioned, and I haven't got much relief yet besides the acupuncture lately. It's been kind of helping, but not getting much better, just not getting worse.
Okay. Was there a recent injury that flared this up, or 6 months ago, or did this just kind of come and go on its own?
Yeah, it just kind of starts out of nowhere, just a small, like, little pain. Like if I'm rolling over in bed and I have to lift my leg from the side, it just get a little pain, and it just has gotten worse and worse. And I do very physical work, usually 6 days a week, and I just don't get a break from it. That's right. Probably the biggest problem here.
Right. Right. Well, and people need to work. I'm assuming that you've done some really aggressive stretching through the hips and through your legs, so that when you do bend and twist, the more you can do at your hips, the less pressure falls on your back.
Right. I've been trying to lift in better positions with the legs and everything, but the only thing that's helped lately is doing the stretches that a physical therapist had told me to kind of do push-ups from the hip.
Yeah.
And do those like 10 at a time and just keep doing it until the pain, because the pain goes all the way down to my ankle, and a lot of the times it's down my leg more, but my buttocks really hurts. And I just try to do toe touches in the morning, and it's just extremely painful. It takes a couple minutes to get past, kind of yelping.
Yeah. Well, what you're describing fits our last email and last caller as well. As long as this has gone on, have you talked to a physician about an injection to help calm this down?
I haven't talked about that. I'd like to do as little kind of invasive, like surgery-type stuff as possible.
Yes, yes. And I understand that. And, it sounds like what you're doing and what the therapist is having you do is a good combination, as long as there's also some strengthening, some core work along with that. And again, the more bending you can do through the hips and less through your back, the better. Every time you bend at the back, it's like doing 10 jumping jacks on a sprained ankle. And so whatever you can set up and modify at work, so to minimize lifting or to split the lifting task up into segments, so you're not just grabbing something from the floor or the ground, lifting all the way up, but if you can lift something halfway, maybe to your knees or mid-thigh, and then put it on, a table or a bench or in the back of a truck, and then you lift it from there, can help a little bit in terms of taking, a few straws off that camel's back. Other than that, it sounds like what you're doing is pretty much on par of what I'd be doing with you as well.
All right.
Okay. I guess one real quick question about the pain. Is it common for it to feel like it's a physical, like, muscle problem that I have to stretch out when it's supposed to be just pain coming from, like, a pinched nerve in my back? Because it just feels like, especially when I do the stretches, I'm stretching out some sort of muscle, and it feels like there's something inside my buttocks area that, like, I'm stretching out less than a pinched nerve. I guess, is that common to feel like that?
It is really common, and that's why I mentioned before, people come in and they tell me they've been stretching their hamstrings like crazy, because the hamstring in fact does feel tight, and it is tight, but it's not just a local muscle problem. It's tight for another reason, and it's tight because that nerve is irritated and just sending more signals to that muscle, so the muscle never really gets a break, and it tightens up in response to that. And so what you described first thing in the morning also is very typical of, you know, again, it's nerve-related as to why that muscle is tight. And so, again, I wouldn't necessarily do toe touches. Again, I would do the calf stretch, that runner stretch that we do for our calves, and then maybe stretch knee to chest. So to help us that tightness to a degree, but then you won't add any more irritation to that nerve.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I was nipped. Time. Thank you guys for keeping this all going.
Yeah, appreciate it. Laurie, you were going to add something.
Well, yeah, and you know, Bill's description and discussion here are very similar to, you know, Rick earlier, our hiker, which was why I questioned whether or not he really had a hamstring strain or whether it was possible he had injured his back while he was hiking, because that feeling of the hamstring strain and tightness can mimic a sciatic. So yeah, that's why we often say, you know, if you're not getting better, you should go in and get examined so that someone can look at you and determine really what the source of the problem is.
And again, thanks so much for calling. Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne Brody, our guests today, as we take a look at all those kind of physical therapy issues that, well, we all want to, one way or another, get involved with at some point in our lives. You can join in. We have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We had someone, caller Joe, actually, in Madison, would like to hear more about golfer's elbow. Which was talked that we mentioned a little earlier and talked about a little earlier. Laurie, you want to chime in?
Sure. Golfer's elbow is kind of the opposite of tennis elbow. Tennis elbow occurs on the outside of the elbow and is a result usually of repeated wrist extension activities, where if your palm is down, you're lifting your wrist and hand up. Golfer's elbow occurs on the inside of the elbow and is usually a result of that swing where you bend your wrist towards your little finger and flex it a little bit. And it's actually an inflammation or an irritation, or in many cases a degeneration of the tendons that flex your wrist, that bend your wrist. So this is why we pay so much attention to the wrist. You say, well, the pain is at my elbow. It's an elbow thing. But they're actually not muscles that move your elbow. It's the origin of muscles that move your wrist. So it's really the repetitive wrist movement that causes both golfers and tennis elbow. And so we usually rest them or try to control the loads on those muscles by putting you in a wrist splint to immobilize your wrist or to give it some support during high activity levels. So if you're out gardening, woodworking, or whatever, we try to control it with that wrist splint. There are also the forearm straps that you can use. And what that does is it takes some of the pressure off the insertion of that muscle into the bone above the wrist and essentially creates a new insertion for it. And that relieves some of the tension on it. But typically it's a matter of doing the right strengthening exercises for those wrist muscles. And those should usually be under the direction of a physical therapist so they can instruct you specifically in how to do those, because there is a right way and a wrong way to do those that can make the problem worse.
There you go. Okay. We have, that was a really good explanation. Thanks, Laurie. We have Rock in Eau Claire with something different to talk about. Hi, Rock.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, tell us what's on your mind.
Yes, I'm kind of a conundrum. For the last year or so, I've had sciatica, and it sounds by some of the callers that are calling in that sciatica definitely is something that's common, but yet very, very difficult to figure out what the root of the problem is. And so where I'm at right now, I've had imaging done, and my doctor at Mayo in Rochester said that I've got some wear and tear on my L4, L5, I had an EMG. I'm sure the professionals there will know exactly what an EMG is, and trying to determine where the genesis of my problem is coming from. So my question is, will the EMG determine whether or not the sciatica is coming from L4, L5? My doctor has also said it may be coming from my glute muscle called piriformis syndrome. So I'd like to hear the answer to that, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good questions. And again, sciatica implies there's pain down the back of the leg. That's the course of the sciatic nerve comes down in kind of mixed amongst the hamstring. And then typically there are also symptoms below the knee. So it can be pain into the calf, down into the heel, and then sometimes also numbness and tingling and maybe weakness. Most frequently, it is related to something in that low lumbar spine. And whether it's a herniated disc, as one of our callers before, or over time, arthritic changes can occur at the disc or small facet joints that can put pressure on a nerve. But that is not the only source of the sciatica. The piriformis muscle is a deep hip rotator deep in the buttock. And I think one of our callers was alluding to that before. The sciatic nerve goes right out through the buttock area by our sit bone, and the piriformis crosses that area. And in a percentage of people, part of the sciatic nerve actually courses through the muscle belly of the piriformis. And so if the piriformis muscle goes into spasm or becomes exceedingly tight, it can cause irritation of the sciatic nerve at that point and give similar symptoms. Initially, the rehabilitation isn't all that different. Regardless of the source, you need to take tension off the sciatic nerve. You work on muscle imbalances. You know, why did this get irritated in the first place? You work on strength and coordination activities. And if that doesn't help, you can't get the pain up out of the leg, then that's where imaging or electrodiagnostic testing, like EMG, comes into play. An EMG can help distinguish where is the nerve impacted. Is it centrally related to the spinal cord, or is it out in the periphery, you know, out in the limb where the compression or irritation is in fact taking place? And then when you start having MRI and EMG, then oftentimes the thinking is we may go on and do an injection or maybe a surgical intervention.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if it's been over a year, I think that's well within the time frame of having those types of tests. But again, the sciatic nerve, once it's irritated, it does not like to be stretched. And so stretching hamstrings too often, too aggressively, people who run, climb, hike, especially with long stride lengths, that nerve never gets a chance to settle down. So you just try to modify as many of those things as possible.
And that's been exactly the case for me. I've actually had an injection in my piriformis muscle, and I had an injection in my L405 back in September. And I think that's why the people at Mayo, and I've got a great doctor at Mayo, they're just kind of scratching their heads trying to determine, okay, what's the next step? So I appreciate it, though. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Aaron in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hold on a second. I'm pulling over. I need to drive for a bit. Okay, so I suffered a pretty bad injury about a year ago, which led to my left leg being immobilized for probably about 6 months. And that developed a contracture in my Achilles tendon. So it's, I'm not sure if it's like called calcification or what. But point is, I've been trying to stretch it as much as I possibly can. And specifically what I'm wondering is kind of a dynamic stretching more effective, or is just holding a stretch more effective? And then, of course, if you guys have any other ideas for what could work, that would be great.
How contracted is your Achilles? How much ankle motion do you have?
It starts to put a little bit of resistance, like, you know, a bit beyond 90 degrees. So it definitely affects like how much I can lift it up. But, you know, I can, yeah. So, like, it's a little bit affecting, but it's almost at 90 degrees, and I can kind of live with it with a little bit of a hip hike.
Okay. Well, you don't want to be doing a lot of hip hiking because that's going to translate into symptoms in your hip and low back. Do you have a lift in your shoe?
You know how insurance is, but I should be getting a new AFO sometime soon because I had a lot of atrophy.
Okay.
It was a neurological injury.
Okay.
So I had a lot of atrophy for a while, and the original AFO doesn't really fit anymore, so I've just been going at it without.
Okay, all right. Because there are some simple heel lifts you can get over the counter and so on to try to give you a little bit more clearance for your walking so that you don't have to alter your gait. Because the alterations in your gait are what eventually will take its toll. In terms of your question about dynamic versus static stretching, they're both good and they both have benefits. dynamic stretching is going to give you short-term increases in length. It's going to warm the tissue. It'll lengthen it. You know, typically what we would call acutely for a short term, and then over time it will go back to its resting length. The real way to really add length to the tendon is prolonged static stretching. But that doesn't mean static stretching for 60 seconds, because you'll still only get acute changes with that. You know, you're really talking hours of static stretching, and that's why they make things like DynaSplints that people wear at night to actually lengthen the tissue. So have they talked about any of those kinds of splints for you at night?
There's been some mention of it. I've been kind of like, you know, I haven't been to the doctor much lately. Do you happen to know if there's any kind of like, you know, point of no return where, you know, it's been stuck like that for long enough, it's not going to get better? Or,
not knowing the rest of your injuries and how the neurologic piece comes into play, you can have some ongoing contractures that are neurologically mediated, and I can't answer that question. But mechanically, from a musculoskeletal point of view, you've got a couple-year window. So if you've only been out, you know, for 6 months to a year, there's still room for progressive improvement, especially at a young age, and it sounds like you're relatively young.
So
there's more room for improvement in that age group. So I would stick with it. But, you know, the more often you stretch, the more frequently you stretch, and the more often you take that muscle through its full length, it will respond, because tissues respond to loads that are placed on them. So if you continually place loads on it in a lengthened position, it should respond, but you've got to be diligent about it.
Mm-hmm. Bill, you were going to add something?
Yeah, Aaron, besides the Achilles stretching, and again, I'm not quite sure the type of immobilization that you were in, but the other thing that could be limiting your motion in that direction, you know, pulling your toes up, you could have some joint stiffness of the ankle joints themselves. And so if nobody has at least assessed you from a joint a mobilization standpoint of the ankle and foot joints, sometimes some aggressive joint stretching, which is different than muscle stretching, and you need a second pair of hands, can give you a little more mobility, and sometimes quite a bit more mobility. So it's, if that has not been a component of your rehab, there might be something to think to add to what you're currently doing.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Renee and Aaron, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks.
What's on your mind?
Well, it was such a hot summer. I went barefoot towards the end of the summer. I have two little boys. I'm on my feet all the time. But I have worn orthotics my whole life since I was a teenager. And so I started having all kinds of pain in my left heel. And after about 2 months of the pain, I went in. They did an x-ray. The doctor told me I had bursitis of the heel. I also have a bone spur. And I had all the symptoms of plantar fasciitis. So we decided to do a cortisone shot, which I had done maybe 6 weeks ago. And so the plantar fasciitis went away, but I still have pain, and I like to walk, hike, be on my feet. And I've never gotten back to normal, and I'm wondering, what can I do knowing I do have a bone spur and the cortisone shot has not taken away the inflammation?
Where does your foot hurt? Does it still hurt in the same place?
It does. It's like the center of the heel.
So when you say your plantar fasciitis has gone away, what plantar fasciitis is typically that pain back at the heel. So what pain went away?
Well, I couldn't, like in the middle of the night, my two-year-old would cry. And so whenever I was sedentary and tried to step on my foot, it was super painful.
Yeah.
And that part has gone away.
Okay.
Now I just have the constant aching pain all day long, but I don't have that extra pain when I'm off my foot and then step on it again.
Okay. And what else have you done to try to rehabilitate this?
I try to do the Achilles stretches.
Okay.
That they had mentioned, and I've tried a tennis ball, rolling a tennis ball, but it seems the more I try to stretch it out, the worse it gets.
Okay.
And I've put it on ice a few times, and that hasn't seemed to take away any of the problem. And I'm wondering if I should start doing heat. I haven't. And I've started taking ibuprofen because I'm at a loss, and I'm making an appointment to go back to the physical therapist. I did get new about 6 weeks ago. I also wanted to just end the problem, and so I did the cortisone and got brand new orthotics made, but they are not they're not seeming to do the job.
And we got about 30 seconds or so for you to answer.
Okay. Well, sometimes when your plantar fasciitis is flared, the orthotics are sometimes too painful. I don't know how it feels with the orthotics in. If you haven't tried a night splint, that might be something to try. In terms of, I presume you're wearing your good shoes and you've remedied all that.
I'm in the orthotics day to night. Yep.
Okay. So it seems like the stretching is aggravating it, so maybe back off on that. And switch from the Achilles stretching to a specific plantar fascia stretching, which the physical therapist, if you're going to see the physical therapist soon, can help you with.
Mm-hmm. And with that, we're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Lori and Bill. Maybe we'll have some more comments on this call. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nothing ruins activities more than a sore back or painful muscles, but once a month we're fortunate to have a couple of folks who know how to deal with those kinds of things. Lori Tanbrody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, one of our guests today. Always a pleasure, Lori.
Good to be here.
And Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic. Our other guest, he's with the UW Hospitals and Clinics, of course. And Bill, great to have you with us.
Thank you. Always glad to be here, Larry.
And we have Ingrid in Wauwatosa with a question for you. So I just want to turn right to her. Ingrid, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Although, is this supposed to be just spine? I'm thinking my questions are knee related.
Knees are fine.
We got knees.
Yep. Fire away.
Yeah. Okay. Here's my history. Bilateral meniscus tears, most recently May, arthroscopy on my left knee, and then 5 years ago on my right knee. I did so well for years with my right knee, and I'm just having a hard time recovering from this left one, and now they both hurt, and they're both swollen. I do... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, and I do exercises to strengthen the quads and the hams. I have a little workout. I use a ball. And I wasn't opposed to cortisone shot, and I had one in September so I could dance at my daughter's wedding. And, boy, of course, that helps for a while. And I also presented with tennis elbow. And I'm like, what's going on? You know, I'm normal-weighted and stuff like that. But and, of course, my orthopedic surgeon said, well, yep, definitely that left one. Hopefully we'll get over the hump with the cortisone. I can do your right knee too, Ingrid. I'm like, okay. And then he said, I can do your right elbow. I said, no, that's enough. But sure enough, it all helped, and I'm sure it's because I absorbed it systemically. So what do you got for me?
Tell me a little bit more about your knees. Did you have injuries or these degenerative tears?
I think it's degenerative tears. You know, I was a gymnast, did running, did tennis, all of which I can't do now.
And may I ask your age?
54.
Okay. Oh, you're awfully young for that.
Well,
yeah.
But, so you had your left one scoped in May. There was no injury precipitating that, just a gradual onset of...
Right, a gradual onset. However, and I knew what it was from having it before, and I, like, delayed. I really... walked and lived with it for over a year.
Okay. And when they looked in your knees, do you have significant arthritis in your knees?
I think you guys graded on a 1 through 4, if I remember right, and I was a 2.
Okay. Well, you're still on the easy end of it. So, you know, the cortisone shot will sort of get you over the hump of a wedding, but it's not going to be the long-term solution for your knee.
Oh, no, and I can feel the fluid on it right now.
Right.
And I
and
was open to trying acupuncture, and I don't know if...
Have you had injections? Have you had things like Synvisc?
No.
Okay. You know, that would tend to be the next step in your age group of injections, a series of injections, typically three. It's not cortisone. It's a hyaluron-based medication, and it helps many people. So that's kind of where I'd go next. And if your physician hasn't offered that, you know, I'd ask about that.
You say it's SYNVISC, like
SYNVISC.
Okay.
That's just one. It's one of the brands. It's one of the more common ones. In terms of strengthening, quad and hamstrings are good, but you really need core. There's much more research about core strength around your hips and pelvis to help decrease stress on your knees. You're also in the age group where hormonal changes can lead to deterioration in your connective tissue, and that may account for your tennis elbow as well. So I'd say, you know, getting in to see somebody for an overall examination, potentially of how you move, how you walk, how you stand, how you sit, how you squat, how you transition movements. You know, it may be that how you move is predisposing you to more wear and tear on your joints. So, you know, a conversation with a physical therapist about those things might be helpful as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. And that's really who's going to assess me best for how I move, isn't it?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and get you on the right exercises for your hips and for your elbow. You don't want to inject your elbow. You don't want a cortisone injection in your elbow.
Oh. And good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it, Ingrid. I want to turn to Carla next, who has a question for you, too. Let's go there. Hi, Carla.
Hello, and hello, Larry. This is Carla Baumgartner.
Oh, hi, Carla.
Hey, how are you? I want to first start out by thanking you all, because I called probably about 9 months ago with a shoulder issue, which you gave very good advice on.
Oh,
the problem I was having at the time with my shoulder is now pretty much gone, but while I was really rehabilitating my shoulder, I was doing more heavily cardio exercises, and I think I ramped up too quickly, and my Achilles tendons became really sore. And so I was doing some running, not a lot, like maybe 2 or 3 miles, you know, three times a week. And it was really sore, so I decided to move to some different kinds of exercises like yoga, and then I was doing P90X, not a lot of plyometrics, but the other pieces of P90X, which are more strength training. And that's probably been 6 to 9 months, and the Achilles are still very sore, and I'm not really sure. So then about a month ago, I just stopped doing pretty much everything, trying to see if it would get better, and they're still very sore. They're not as sore as they were, and I'll kind of describe what I mean by sore. When I first get up in the morning, my ankles feel very stiff, and they hurt just to walk around, and I don't have a very full range of motion. So I've just been in the morning getting up and warming up and stretching my ankles and trying to strengthen my calves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much all I've been doing. It's been about a month, and it's gotten better, but it seems like it's kind of plateaued where it's just still sore. So if I, like, pinch the back of my legs, it's or the back of my ankles, they're still sore.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't know. So my questions, I guess, are, is am I doing the right things? How long should I expect to wait? And while I'm trying to rehabilitate them, are there things I should or shouldn't be doing? I mean, it drives me crazy to, like, not be doing anything.
Well, you know, Carla, that's why you should go in and be seen. You've described so beautifully, you know, what happens with Achilles and the typical natural history of untreated. People do stuff, and then they start and stop. They start something else, and they stop that, and then they kind of give up. And, you know, here we are months later, and you're still not really better. So, you know, the information you gave suggests that exercise got you partway there. Now I need to get you the rest of the way there. And what that means is you really need very specific exercises for your Achilles. It's not just a matter of doing toe raises. It's a matter of some very specific kinds of training for your Achilles, typically a combination of stretching at the right intensity and at the right dosage, and these negative eccentric exercises for your Achilles. And then sort of some conversations about how you move, looking at your shoe wear, looking if you need a heel lift, and so on and so forth to really get you the rest of the way there. Achilles and patellar tendons are notorious for being very difficult to recover from because you use them all day. You use them even in static standing to keep your balance. And so they're hard to recover from, and they really need the guidance of a professional, especially when you're months out like you are. Because as is the case with any of these problems, the longer they are around, the harder they are to get rid of, and the more likely they are to come back. So I think it'd be in your best interest, especially as you report going crazy, not being able to do what you want to do, to get some professional advice to get you the rest of the way there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks for the advice.
Yeah. Okay. Good luck, Carla. Thank you. And Julie in Sturgeon Bay, hello to you.
Good afternoon. I appreciate your taking my call. I have another knee question. I had a torn meniscus about 5 years ago in my left leg and had a lot of scar tissue and trouble kind of coming back from that. And now I'm having problems with my right knee and am scheduled for a knee replacement in January. And I'm wondering if it would be a good idea for me to do some strengthening exercises before that surgery, or if that is not something you would recommend.
Oh, Julie, what a great question. I sure would recommend that, especially since you had some issues with your left knee. It's your right when you're getting replaced?
Yes.
Yeah, because after that right knee replacement, you're going to rely more on the left. And the left doesn't have a pristine history. So as you start to load that one more, recovering from your right, you could find that it deteriorates very quickly. So it's going to be in your best interest to get that leg, and actually both your legs, as strong as possible before surgery. And for people who have, a lot of joint pain, especially lower extremity joints, in anticipation of a joint replacement, is I suggest they get in the pool. Pool is a great way to exercise without putting so much weight on your joints and overworking them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have access to a pool, I'd really recommend getting in there for strengthening. And then if not, if you see a physical therapist for one or two visits, they can give you a home strengthening program to do to prepare you for that knee replacement. I think that'd be a great idea.
Okay. Can you tell me in the water, in the pool, what types of things would be helpful?
Well, typically we have the patient go through a series of exercises and see how they tolerate them. Because if they do certain exercises, for example, squatting or stepping up on a box might be things I would have you do to strengthen your leg. But if that still produces pain in the water, then I wouldn't have you do that, and I'd have to find an alternative that didn't include a knee bending, for example.
Okay.
Walking is always good. I also like to have people do a series of exercises using their arms that help strengthen their core muscles and improves their balance, which is important post-operatively.
Mm-hmm.
Well. How about a stationary bike? Is that a good thing for now or not?
It's a good thing for now if it doesn't flare up your knees.
Okay.
Bill, you were going to add something, weren't you?
Yeah, just to reinforce a point that Lori just made, Julie, is it's not only strengthening around your knees, but around your hips and up into the core will help you a lot in terms of keeping pressure off those knees.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, whether you're in the pool or you're strengthening elsewhere, this is where, again, a physical therapist, one or two visits, I think, would be plenty where they could, you know, look for any strength deficits and teach you how to exercise, minimizing the pressure on the knees.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to do strengthening up into the hips, into the core, too.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. My father-in-law followed he had knee replacement surgery. He followed the recommendations exactly. He did all of the exercises, did everything that he was told to do beforehand to get ready for it. Yeah. His surgery turned out great. He followed the exercises after the surgery.
Yeah.
And he's plays golf every day and enjoys life.
Gives you your best chance to have the best outcome.
Yeah, I mean, he really, the doctor said, well, not everybody follows the rules as well as you. And so, Julie, Do what they tell you.
I think the other point, that Bill alluded to, he said, working on the core, but also sometimes people don't realize that perhaps now they're not using an assistive device. But after surgery, there's a good chance they'll be using something like a walker, and that means weight bearing on your wrists and shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
So again, in the pool, those arm exercises help prepare your shoulders and your back for the kinds of loads that they're going to see that are going to be very different than preoperative.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling.
Good luck.
Good luck. And John and Mosini, thanks to you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking. Oh, I guess my question is kind of twofold. My wife has had chronic sinusitis as well as neck pain for the majority of our years together. And it seems that when I give her a neck rub, she is able to get back almost full movement in her neck. So I'm wondering if stretching exercise that might help her with her neck.
Boy, it's too bad. We're just having such a hard time hearing you, John, but I think we've got most of it. Bill?
Yeah, I think I caught that the neck massage rubbing that John's doing sounds like it gives short-term relief in terms of restoring motion for his wife. And so with stretching exercise also be helpful. When things like massage consistently only give temporary relief and nothing long-lasting, then what it tells me is it's more than just a muscle knot or just a muscle that's short. There's some reason why those muscles are tightening up. And it could be the chronic sinus problem that is resulting in this muscle activity that just isn't able to quiet down. But there can also be a postural component that may be tied to the sinus problem or, the work setting, the activities that John's wife does. I guess it sounds like it's chronic. It's been going on for a while. That if she has not seen a physical therapist to go in for even just a couple visits, and I think they can tell within a visit or two how much they can help. But looking at her posture down into her upper back across the shoulder girdle, there's times stretching and strengthening down below the neck can take a lot of tension off the neck muscles. And so that would be my recommendation if that has not been tried already.
Okay. And Bevan Rhinelander, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I have another sciatic nerve question.
Okay.
Everyone has been talking about it talked about pain going down the back of the leg. I have pain that goes down the side of my leg from my hip down through the all the way down to the calf of my leg, and I did go to physical therapy for like about 2 months. My orthopedic doctor said it was an IT band problem. And then I went to a chiropractor for another problem I had, and he said it's a sciatic nerve deal. So I'm not quite sure what it is.
Yeah, and that's a really tough spot to be in. The sciatic nerve classically, the pain and tightness is in the back of the leg. And that's tied because most of the lumbar spine problems occur at L4, 5, and L5, S1, the lowest segments, and those nerves contribute to the sciatic nerve. There are other parts of the lumbar area where the nerve pain can be more on the side of the leg and continue on down below the knee. Laura, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in most cases, IT band pain doesn't go much below the knee, correct? Doesn't go down into the lower leg, per se.
No. Yeah, it stays. It pretty much stays up around the hip and mid-thigh. It doesn't usually travel farther down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a real deep, deep aching pain. Does that help any at all in the diagnosis?
Well, that can still be nerve related. Can give you that kind of pain. So the physical therapist. Have you been given exercises that are designed to move the pain out of the leg? Has the word McKenzie protocol come up at all?
No.
At all. That's an approach that, if you can even call the physical therapist, they may have done it with you, but just never, never classified it that way. And again, the source of symptoms, if it's up in that lumbar area, whatever treatment that can be done there to take pressure off the nerve, That's the goal. Sometimes traction can help, you know, for that low back area, and that can also help help with the differential diagnosis, because traction is not going to change IT band pain if it's related to the IT band as well. Are you having any numbness or tingling along with this?
No, it's just that deep aching pain, and it's not constant. It comes and goes, but when it comes, it comes.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we tend to do is we tend to look at these problems as a single problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have...
Well, I have bursitis in my hips, too.
Right, likely have more than one thing going on, and so it gets very hard to sort out what is what. It could be that because of the bursitis in your hips, you've changed the way you walk, and you've got some... You could have some referred pain... from the bursa, you could have some iliotibial band on top of it and a little bit of sciatic all rolled together.
Thank you.
All right.
Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, thanks a lot for calling, Bev.
Okay.
Good luck.
Appreciate your call. Gina has a shooting pain in one of her heels and wonders if that'll go away or should she be seen?
Well, shooting pains in your heels, I don't know, Bill, if you want to comment, if you think that's spine-related at all, but it's not typical to have shooting pains in your heel. The only thing that comes to my mind is there are some local nerves there that sometimes an irritation of that nerve can mimic plantar fasciitis, and it's in the heel pad, but even so, it tends to be more of a deeper, achier kind of feeling related to that neuritis than a sharpened shooting pain.
Yeah, I agree. And the fact that you mentioned both heels, or I believe it was both heels, again, it could be local, you know, nerve entrapment irritation, but you want to make sure it's not coming from the spine. And especially if it's more the back of the heels, that often, again, differentiating between Achilles tendon issues and then the lumbar spine. And so if that has not been sorted out, I'd recommend she's going to be seen to help try to nail down where is this coming from.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just not a usual presentation for most musculoskeletal conditions.
Right.
Well, here we are out of time. I want to thank you both. You're back on December 17th.
We are.
Okie-dokie, then.
We are. Look forward to it.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us today. Lori Tyne Brody with us by phone today. Normally, she's with us in the studio. She's a physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And he is senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinics. We have links to where they're located. You can go on my Facebook page and find out all about that. Just taking a look tomorrow, Jessica Bell of My Wine School is with us to talk about great ideas for holiday wines. And then at 11:45, Chef Terry Milligan of the Inn at Christopher's in Sister Bay shares recipes for great Thanksgiving side dishes. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.